Welcome to the SEMO Marketing Podcast, where we interview business owners, leaders, or marketing professionals to find out their lessons and stories for success.
Welcome to episode number 95 of the SEMO Marketing Podcast. And if this is your first time here, thank you very much for joining us. If you are a repeat visitor, thank you for returning. My name is Simon Dell. I am the CEO of SEMO. If you want to know what we do and who we are, you can check us out, SEMO, CEMOH.com. We are an outsourced marketing department company. It's a little bit more complicated than those three words, so hopefully you can jump on the website and find out a bit more about us. But this is my podcast. I've been doing this for about 3 years now. As you said, we're up to 95 episodes. And this is one of my favorites coming up here. I am interviewing a gentleman by the name of Tony McQuinn, who you will gauge very, very quickly is originally from Ireland. He is the director and co-founder of Body Armor Australia. And Body Armor is a hangover cure drink. Now, it's a bit more complicated than that, and he will explain that in a bit more detail, because it's not just for hangovers. That's one of its benefits. But it's a drink that you can use to replenish your energy, recover from hangovers, just generally make yourself feel a bit better. It has a fantastic backstory behind it, which involves him and his three co-founders that is completely fascinating. Probably the best thing for me, the best part of the story, is understanding how Tony and the team got this brand to where it is today and the methods that they used to do that. If you have any interest in consumer brands, listening to Tony is absolutely enlightening, I would say. That's a word I don't use often, but there you go. So listen, Tony McQuinn, very interesting, well worth listening to. Some other housekeeping. I obviously mentioned SEMO.com. That's the company that Matt and I are building. Come and find out about us. You can find us on all sorts of social media. Ask SEMO on LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok. We have a TikTok stream. We're kind of still dipping our toes in that water. That's taking us a little bit of time. But yeah, look, if you also get the chance to rate and review us on iTunes, we appreciate that. We are available on iTunes, Spotify, lots of other different channels, Deezer, pretty much where there you can find podcasts, or on our own website. And what else? What else was I going to say? Gilberto, who is our sound engineer, who puts all of these episodes together. He is thepodcastboss.com. If you're thinking of doing a podcast, if you need any kind of sound engineering work, he is your man. So give Gilberto an email and he can help you out. That's pretty much it from the introductions. Let's jump straight into the interview with Tony McQuinn. Welcome to the SEMO Marketing Podcast. Tony McQuinn from Body Armor. How are you?
Thanks very much for having me.
Thank you for coming up here. And a beautiful Irish accent to match my kind of not so beautiful English accent. So how long have you been here?
13 years, yeah, in May. And 2007.
It's the weather and the women and that kind of thing.
The weather and all that sort of stuff that came out. Exactly.
So give us a quick overview about who you are and what you do, because we're going to talk about your background in a minute, but let's explain why you're here.
Yeah. Well, listen, we kicked off Body Armor. This is year three now. Launched the product in 2018, October 2018.
Yep.
In a nutshell, it's 100ml liquid. Yep. It's effectively a liver support and immune system support. But the main reason people drink it is it helps massively with hangovers. That's That's the main reason. That's the number one. So the angle or the market that we've targeted is the social and nightlife scene and the hangover space. We've just seen a big gap here in the Australian market.
I don't want to make it sound like it's too obvious, but an Irishman helping people with their hangovers. Yeah.
If you can't trust the Irish for this, surely.
They would know. They would know. Yeah, they would know how to deal with a hangover.
We've done a fair bit of testing on this one. So, that's basically in a nutshell what we did, and off we went.
So we'll get to that in a minute, but your background is not in this. Your background was what, Rio Tinto?
It is.
HR?
HR, completely different, yeah.
Okay, right.
So, yeah, HR, like 10 years or so.
So were you in HR before you came here?
Always HR, law kind of background.
Right, okay.
That's always been the background, yeah.
So explain to me the point when all of a sudden you went, fuck HR, I'm going to make this stuff.
I think to be honest, it came to us when we were traveling. I've always kind of wanted to get involved in something that we created ourselves.
Right.
I've always been kind of searching and looking for that opportunity. And we were just traveling, a big bunch of us were traveling overseas, and we came across a similar product, and we tested it at first, you know, very skeptical because we've seen a lot of these kind of products in the past. And we just said, oh, sure, nothing to lose. Yeah. Give it a nudge. And there was 12 of us, and we could not believe the effectiveness of it. And kind of there was a mixture of Aussies and Irish in amongst the group, and everyone had that kind of light bulb moment going, holy shit, like how does a product like that doesn't exist in a country like Ireland or Australia, where the drinking culture is, you know, is pretty up there.
Where did you see it? Southeast Asia or?
Well, South Korea is where it's at massively,
right.
But huge in the States as well, where we initially saw it was in the States.
So I guess at that point, you didn't need to know. I mean, I'm making an assumption here, but you didn't need to know all the ingredients on the back here. Right. You kind of
in the group of 12, there's four of us decided to kind of joint venture, let's call it, and go from there. None of us have a chemistry background, so we had to hire the chemist.
Yeah.
So we got back together when we got back to Australia, kind of pooled some funds together.
Yeah.
Realized that none of us actually really know too much about how the chemistry side of things work. Decided to kind of hire a team of chemists, and off we went to work from there. So it was just around looking to see what exists out there in the world, and then just working alongside the chemists to understand how the formula and the composition can work.
Yeah.
And we kind of picked the best of each of the ingredients. And then the best part of the funnest part of the whole project was the testing phase.
Obviously, the testing phase.
The testing phase was definitely, you know, hard work in the name of science.
Not quite sure if it's worth. We're going to need to try this one more time.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
So, all right. So you've got a product. Is there still four of you involved?
So we've grown since, obviously. But still the same four originals.
All active in the business.
And we all look after a different leg of the business, per se. And then we still have our team of chemists and a lab that's currently based in Brisbane, and we're in the process of moving to a bigger place.
How does that work? How does that work with four of you, the dynamics of decision making and things like that?
It works quite well, to be honest. Like, I mean, that's where the HR piece came in.
We
spent a fair bit of time at the beginning to get kind of the fundamentals of how we're going to operate as a team together. And that was probably one of the best piece of time that we spent since we kicked off, just ensuring that we had our kind of, you know, operating procedures in place, all this kind of fluffy stuff super handy so many times in helping us navigate through kind of difficult times and helping us make decisions.
Well, give us a snapshot then. If there's four of you in the room, you all, you know, two of you want to do something, two of you don't want to do something.
Mm.
How do you make that decision?
So, like, ultimately, from a baseline, we've got like what we kind of call our golden rules, which we've developed from the get-go, which lists out basically certain types of scenarios that we could be in.
Right.
So we kind of lean a lot on that, and that's something that we've each signed off on.
Okay.
But other than that, the four of us know each other for a long, long, long time. So we kind of also know what kind of works for us, what takes us, what doesn't. And then usually there'll be one of us kind of more level-headed that will step in and go, hey, back down to earth. And four of us are very similar, but also very different. And that's kind of how it works.
So, okay. And all Irish or?
No. Three Irish, one token Australian. Wow. Four Irish would be a bit sus.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that could be.
That'd be a bit like, that's a bit something not right here.
Yeah.
So we'd need the Aussie in there to kind of give us that level of credibility, I guess.
So, all right. So you've created this product. The brand, where did that all come from?
That, again, brainstorming. At the very beginning, like, we spent a lot of time literally just in rooms with whiteboards and designing who we want to be, what, like, creating effectively an avatar for the brand, what the brand looks like, who the audience is going to be, how we're going to market ourselves, what is going to be the message, what are going to be some of the hurdles and that we're going to face immediately when we get out of the gate.
Yeah.
All that piece. So through that came the birth of Body Armor, I guess. Yeah.
And did you, from a design perspective, logos and things like that, did that sort of go out to an agency, or did you? I mean, again, the other thing I look at with a bottle like this, I mean, I presume there's a bit of research that goes into
The first piece, like, when we did our kind of brainstorm around what are going to be some of the challenges that we're going to face straight away, and the first one with a product like ours, especially marketed in the hangover space, was skepticism.
Yeah.
Right, because there's been, you know, realistically, there's been a lot of kind of crappy products in the past, you know, the pill, the powder form, the thing, the droplets in the wine. Yeah. We've tried them all, basically. So that was the first piece. So the first piece of work that we did is, like, what can we do from a mitigating perspective to make sure that, you know, we're kind of backed in that space. So the first piece was obviously design. That's why we went to glass, high-end kind of feel to it.
Yeah.
The second piece was just ensuring that our design and logos were quite slick. So we did get, you know, some consultation from outside the group. And then the third and biggest piece is we went down the path of medicine. So in Australia, you can list a consumable under the Food Act, which is just basically proving that your ingredients aren't going to kill anyone.
Yep.
Or you can go down the medicine route, which then allows you to make therapeutic claims. So for that to happen, you have to have scientific evidence that backs any claims you want to make.
Right.
A lot more complicated. It took us about a year and a half to get there.
Okay.
And again, without the chemist, we wouldn't have been able to get that done. But we got that done, and that's under the Therapeutic Goods of Australia, so TGA, which is kind of equivalent to the FDA. Over in the States. And that allowed us then to go into kind of chemists and sell into the pharmaceutical world. And again, give us that level of credibility that we needed.
One of the things when I used to work in the beer industry was about the color of the bottles. So there's all this kind of mental, there's a real psychology around whether the bottle should be clear, brown, or green, because essentially that's your choice when it comes to glass bottles. Was there any thoughts around that? I mean, was it always going to be, because obviously you can't see it, What colour is the liquid?
The liquid is kind of a dark green, maroon, kind of kind of colour. Yeah.
And I kind of guess if people saw the liquid, they might not.
Perhaps. Like kind of all health kind of products, you know? They're colourful, I suppose.
Yeah. And it's often easier to drink it. The reason for the beer one was if you put it in a brown bottle, you know, people don't. Aren't necessarily drinking it with their eyes, which sounds really weird.
Yeah.
But they don't necessarily see the colour of the beer before. It's all down to the taste.
Yeah.
Because the brown bottle hides the colour, as does the green bottle. So when you put it in a clear bottle, all of a sudden you've got to make sure that the colour looks good as well. Because if it looks too pale or something, it can put people off buying it and holding it.
No. Fair call. Fair call.
So I wonder whether there was any, whether, or that was
not
just
necessarily
just
the design. The design fitted with the brand. Yeah. Basically, that was kind of, we went more design versus colour of you know, of the liquid.
And in terms of manufacturing, is it all made here or overseas?
Yes, so it's all, the formula itself is all made here. So our lab is in Yatala, Brisbane.
Yep.
I've got a team of chemists that manages all that piece. The raw materials are predominantly in Australia, but quite a few overseas as well. And then the glass is custom made in China.
Okay. Mm. So day one, you've got your first samples, you're happy with it, it tastes great, it's doing everything you've expected, you've all got drunk, you've tested it out. Everything, all the boxes are ticked.
Tick the boxes.
Where do you go from there? Like, I mean, when you look on your website, it's listed in celebrations. And
we've got Liquor Legends, right. Bottle Marts, Celebrations, Terry White, and a few other kind of independents.
Okay.
And then chatting to a few kind of other larger players. So.
Was that you guys just going out there?
I think that the strategy for us from a wholesale perspective was quite simple. Like, we got in the door with a few small independents and we said, let's build the stats.
Yep.
And once we got the stats, we got something to showcase, then we can go to the larger players. And off we went from there. And our turning point was Terry White contacted us because we were a few small independent pharmacies. And then we got that call, which was a great day a year and a half ago or so. And that, once we were able to kind of get into the Terry White stores, it really gave us that level of credibility again from the customer's perspective. Because, hey, hang on, if you're in Terry White's, you've got to be somewhat legit.
Absolutely.
You know? And that was really the turning point for us, and that kind of dominoed effect then into the other brands and whatnot.
How does Terry White So how does Celebrations, for example, react when, you know, yeah, we're in Terry White and Celebrations are like, well, hold on a second, that's not... How does that conversation...
It's kind of like two different customer bases as well, because like we're probably split, I would say, 70-30. 70% of our customers use it purely for alcohol reasons.
Yeah.
And then we've got 30% that use it literally just for fitness, especially in the bodybuilding space, because we've got four quite strong liver cleansing agents as part of the formula.
Yeah.
So from a Terry White perspective, you got pharmacists that are really pushing it from a liver support, immune system support, as well as, whereas bottle shops, it's just, you know, are you going to have a few drinks tonight or a big one?
But I can't buy one of those as well.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Okay. That's how it works.
So it's someone within the team sort of doing that sales? Is there someone sort of in charge?
So how we broke it up, the four of us, so it's kind of myself and Tig, another good Irish name, basically, kind of looks after the business development side of it. My brother, Oisin, he looks after all that kind of marketing, design. So he's done everything you can see from a website, social media, all that sort of stuff. And then we've got the token Australian, Patrick Sarge, the big friendly, as we call him, and looks after all kind of logistics, background, operations, office, that sort of stuff.
So you've got, often with these kind of products, and again, I'd experienced this in the beer industry as well, is that getting it on the shelf is half of the battle.
Big.
Getting people to walk in the bottle shop or the Terry White and getting it to take it off the shelf is a whole nother ballgame.
Absolutely.
So what's been the strategy for you guys getting this in front of consumer eyes?
I think you're deadly right. Like, people pick up the bottle, they go, oh yeah, feels cool, good, and then they see hangover relief and it's nearly like another kind of one of these kind of products, and they kind of put it down. So you're deadly right. From a marketing perspective, I mean, we've done all the traditional stuff that you can expect, you know, radio, you know, billboards, all that sort of stuff, just to get a few touch points. We do a lot of work with the staff itself, so incentivizing the training, staff, and giving back to staff, giving back to staff for pushing products. We do all your taste testings and all that sort of jazz. A lot of work with influencers, and then we've kind of connected ourselves with a lot of sporting teams as well to really push that message around the health angle that we're trying to push. Because ultimately the product isn't there, or we've not designed it for the binge drinkers, because we get a lot of that at the beginning as well. It's like, Jesus, a product like this is going to just encourage people to drink more.
Well, I was going to say, and I guess that there's a media challenge around that.
100%. From a PR perspective as well, it was quite challenging at the beginning to kind of really push the message of, hey, this is not for someone that drinks two bottles of vodka and gets, you know, passes out. This is for, you know, the individual that has a normal night out, we'll say. And wants to be able to function the following day, right?
Yeah.
So, like, our number one customers at the moment are parents.
Yeah.
Parents have kids,
and
they enjoy to have a few glasses of wine during the week. They're maybe a little bit older, so they feel the hangover pretty bad, and they've got a six-year-old next morning that's screaming, and they want to be able to have a bit of fun with them. Yeah. That's what works for best. You know, when we did the trials for the TGA approval, it was between, you know, 5 and 10 points.
Yeah.
Is what it's at.
Okay.
And anything in that realm, and, you know, slightly more is sweet.
Yeah.
You know, and the guys that will go a bit, or girls that go a bit, you know, next level.
I've got two kids under 5, so I completely understand. Yeah. And I'm 46, so I'm like, it hurts. Really, like, if I go out on a Saturday night, I'm always saying to my wife, look, I'm going to be home by 10 o'clock because, quite frankly, I can't, at 6 a.m., I can't deal with it. You know, a hangover and two kids is just like...
Well, stick a few of these in the fridge.
Right.
Test it out the next time.
I was going to say, I'll take one for me and one for the wife, see what she thinks as well. What did you find works best from a marketing perspective? Because obviously you've got the challenge that there's two markets here. You've got the challenge that one of those markets is probably a bit suspect on hangover relief. Mm-hmm. You know, you said you did billboards, you've done radio, social media, all that. What gets the best kind of cut through?
Realistically, the formula kind of sells itself. Like, if we can get people, you know, sampling it, trialing it out, that does... It sells itself.
Yeah.
Like, we're quite confident with the formula itself. You know, our ratios are pretty good. 10 people kind of try, 6 will love it. 1 is kind of on the fence, and the other is not for them.
Yeah.
So off the back of that, you know, we do a lot of, just basically at the beginning, the first probably 6 months was just getting bottles in people's hands.
Right.
As many as we possibly could. You know? Yeah. Costly exercise, obviously, and risky, right? Well,
yeah, you know, totally. But I've said it many times, with a product like yours, nobody is going to buy it.
No.
I mean, people might buy it on a whim or a...
You'll get always the people that will test it out, right? And they're great. They're early adopters, as they call them, right?
100%. But the majority of people are not going to buy this off the shelf unless they've already tested it.
Especially because retail is at $9.99, right?
Yeah.
So people go, oh, holy shit, $9.99, that's too expensive. You know, I don't believe in it. off we go, and they don't try it. So the first 6 months was just getting in people's hands, handing it out, as many as we basically could.
And how did you do that? What was the kind of method for that?
We partnered up with the partners that we had, the Terry Whites of the world, and the celebrations and whatnot, and we did kind of sample tastings on days, and we had teams out there. And
so if I was going through and buying a car, exactly as the wine guys do.
Really basic stuff. Brought it right down to basic kind of fundamentals and just getting it out there. So that worked really well. And then, like I said, we kind of linked ourselves with a few kind of sporting teams. So we've got a few kind of Australian Olympians. We've got the Broncos and a few kind of soccer players and whatnot that kind of helped us as well, push it through their channels as well. So
there must have been a point when you guys sat there and thought, shit, this is going to work.
I think it's mostly when the bigger brands started partnering up with us, started contacting us. When it flipped from us having to knock on doors
to the phone ringing.
That was when we started going, right, the numbers are looking healthy. Yeah. You know, there is a demand for us. We start seeing small little competitors pop up, which creates a sector which is healthy. And ultimately, like, we're not reinventing a wheel. We've just looked to see what happens in South Korea, where it's a multi-million dollar industry.
Yeah.
And we've just improved the formula basically and brought it to a country where, listen, partying is healthy.
So when did you guys, so there was four of you in there, did you kind of all leave your jobs at various times, or did you all just go, fuck it, we're all out in one day? Or
myself and my brother, we left on the same day,
right,
basically, okay, at the very, very beginning.
Was he in HR as well?
No, he wasn't. He's an engineer background. Okay, right. Graphics engineer, industrial engineer, so he does that sort of stuff. So all different backgrounds. Tigers in construction, like electrician.
Okay.
You know, and he stayed on probably for another 3 to 6 months, and then when the business was doing well enough, we were able to pull him out.
Yeah.
And Patrick was the last then to come on board. Yeah.
So everyone's full time now.
That's it.
Okay. Right.
Mm.
So where to from now? Obviously, you've got yourself a position in the marketplace. When you guys sit down and think about expanding, is it now taking this overseas or taking this into new markets, or is it staying in this market and moving it into different variations of it?
Overseas is definitely an area you want to go, especially in Asia.
Yep.
And that's where we've trademarked our name and whatnot to be able to move across over there.
Okay.
We won't go there obviously until we've kind of really secured our spot
market.
The market here, and we've still got a long way to go. There's so many areas that we've not kind of touched on just yet. So I think growth around here and each of the states will be a kind of a big focus for us. And that was going to be this year, was all about expansion until, you know, COVID hit, and then we had all the delays and logistics and getting suppliers and all that nonsense that everybody, I'm sure.
All you really need is for someone to say that this cures COVID. Right?
That's it.
Not you, because you obviously couldn't say that. But if an influencer just happened to mention
could
it,
you imagine? You know,
as long as it wasn't, what's his name, Pete off My Kitchen Rules. You don't want him saying that.
Yeah, right? That's it. So no, growth, and then just continuing partnering with brands. Like, we're doing really cool stuff from a commercial perspective. So we've just done let's use the word joint venture commercial with Liquor Legends.
Okay.
Which will release in the next week or so, and it's more kind of comedy skit, and we've kind of changed the angle from, you know, just demonstrating what the benefits and of the formula is and how to use it to more of a fun lifestyle commercial with subtle kind of plugs of the brands in the background, and then working alongside with these. So, you know, we'll start with Liquor Legends, and we've got a few others in the pipeline that we'll start releasing them.
As a brand, it could possibly, you can imagine that it could take itself a little bit too seriously. It kind of could disappear up its own arse of its...
100%. You know. It's a fine line because it is registered as a medicine, and we're super proud of that. And you know, the formula, a lot of work has gone into it. So it's a fine line between making sure that you don't move away from that serious medicinal space.
Yeah.
But also from a branding perspective, you know, we want to have a bit of fun with it. And we want to have a laugh. And because we are linked to the hangover, a social nightlife space, it gives us a lot of room to maneuver to create some kind of funky stuff. So that's what we're at, smack bang in the middle of doing now, getting ready for the silly season, which is kind of the biggest months for us, you know.
And in terms of that overseas strategy, have you guys the thought behind that, is it finding distributors in these countries and having them sell it for you, and then, you know, then you sort of partner them with brand?
One option, or our investors have kind of Chinese backgrounds and networks in that space. So the other option is just to go through the kind of safer option. So
yeah,
but yeah, and I think you know, getting Australian products to countries like China, Japan, and whatnot, they're pretty well sought out for over there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Chinese go nuts.
Absolutely love it. So, and the industry, you know, for this is already existing. Like I said, it's a multi-million-dollar business over there. They're especially in South Korea, like they've gone next level up. They drink it, of course, because it helps from a hangover perspective, but they drink it more so from a health perspective. Thinking, right, I'm going to be having a bottle of wine. Toxins are coming into the body. I'm knocking one of these back first to kind of give back. Get on the wine, and then the next day have something over. It's a bonus.
Yeah,
that's their mentality. It's kind of like the protein drink to gym goers here in Australia.
Yes,
you got the Aussies will not go to the gym without having a protein.
Yeah,
which is ingrained in the culture, and it's kind of the same over there with these.
You mentioned investors there. So when did they sort of come into the picture? Was that right early stage? Or?
No. Very, very end. When was 28th of December.
Okay, last year. Okay, cool.
Yeah, absolutely. So it was just that first year, prove the market.
Yep.
You know, make sure there's room for us.
Yep.
And then once that was done, investors on board, expand. Second year, start kind of our expansion piece.
Right. Okay. And where did you find the investors from? Was it people already interested? Or
through our own networks. We had people that contacted us through seeing what we did marketing-wise. A little bit of door knocking, that sort of stuff. So I literally went to town and looking at everyone that was there to make the kind of best decision that was both, you know, obviously the financial piece, but more so a cultural fit where we wanted to go from a direction perspective. And that, you know, it was going to help us kind of navigate and give us direction and assist us in business acumen and all this stuff, you know?
I guess my last couple of questions, we speak to from a client perspective, but we also know a lot of other people out there from listening in and watching this kind of thing. A really early stage, they're kind of, you know, where you guys were, they've got an idea or they've got the basis of a product and they're testing it out. What's probably the major thing that you've learned through this whole process?
Probably, you know, like I said again, we spent a lot of time at the beginning, you know, mapping out who we are as a brand.
Yeah.
I probably would say, you know, we've even undercooked that and we probably would have spent even more time doing that, designing really who our target audience is and really understanding who we are. That's probably the first piece. The second piece is 100% consistency, because the one thing they don't tell you about startups is the ups and downs and the levels and the seriousness of how up and down it is. You hear about it. Yeah. We hear more of the good stories around, you know, how, you know, you're your own boss and your own time and free time. Yeah. You work from home and laptops and
cash
in. Life is great. And all that sort of stuff. But the downs as well can be pretty intense.
So give us an example. Where has there been a point when you guys have always gone, fuck this, let's not, you know?
Yeah, I think especially at the very, very beginning, you know, we were very green in the marketing space and we attempted a lot of things that just completely flopped, you know, different types of events and different ideas and angles that just didn't work.
Yeah.
And it took a big chunk of capital off. And because we're such, you know, a taboo, I guess, product, and there is that skepticism, you know, the capital side of it was being drained pretty quickly because we're having to get product out there. So we didn't have an enormous amount of room for errors.
Yeah.
And fuck, we did a lot of errors taking in. So we're just sitting back going, oh, Jesus Christ, you know, we couldn't afford that mistake and X, Y, Z.
Give us one. What was probably one you look back on and just go, oh, God, that was a shambles?
Like, we just, logistical errors, dealing with suppliers and completely stuffing up our time frames.
Okay.
So not getting product here in time and then promising that we would have product here when we didn't.
Right.
I think we tried to chew off a little bit much with creating events like music events.
Right.
Didn't go into the nuts and crannies of what was involved, and there was and quite, you know, they're expensive exercises.
Yeah.
So they're probably the more, you know, the PG kind of errors we made along the way.
I bet there's some swearing in there.
There is a bit. But I think consistency is the absolute key. It's when you feel things are gone to shit and there's no way out. It's just being able to push through that and around the corner. The amount of times that we thought, you know, that was our last error we could have afforded. Yeah. Literally a few days later, you know, something would have happened. A new client came on or whatnot, and it boosted us. So it is really about that, pushing through it, even when you think times are a bit rough.
We've talked about sort of next steps, expansion, that kind of thing. Where's the long term goal for this? Is it something that you guys would imagine that, you know, potentially you might sell or exit from in years to come?
I think anyone entering into the consumable space, you know, without having a huge presence already, like Coca-Cola or whatnot,
yeah,
you know, it's the question is it realistic to be such a small player to create a consumable that could ever compete against the giants?
Yeah, like probably and probably whilst it's not a direct competitor, you've got someone who's looking at, say, a can of Red Bull versus
absolutely
against you. So you've got Red Bull who are throwing people out of fucking planes and you know balloons in the stratosphere or whatever.
Exactly.
And you guys who are down in Yatla, you know.
That's it.
Yeah. So,
I mean, the two challenges that we're focusing at the moment is just our own expansion to create the brand.
Yeah.
So the brand nearly outgrows the product, and we can start pushing new types of product lines, which we have in the pipeline. Grow our distribution channel as well, so that it's attractive if there was ever to be an opportunity to join with a larger crowd. And then have it in the back of our mind that we continuously need to build that brand to a point where there will be Coca-Cola or the likes that would come
and knock on your door and say, we like what you're doing. Yep. We think, you know, we can take you from here to here.
Exactly.
I guess the other advantage with a business like yours and the size of that you are is that you can move pretty quickly now. You understand, you know, you've got the chemists, you understand the logistics. You know, Red Bull creating it, just even a new pack size, is probably got to go through 18 months worth of R&D shit like this.
Exactly.
And you can probably go, let's do this, and then possibly it's done in 3 months' time.
Exactly.
You can, you know, and also knowing back Red Bull in the past is that they are very, very specific about the brand, and they want the big feature events.
Mm.
You know, whereas, you know, you guys can sort of hit that kind of grassroots.
Yeah. But even Red Bull, you track it right back to the very beginning, and they were one of the first movers in the energy space for the United States.
Yeah.
You know, and if you look at their first year or two, there was, you know, struggles in getting it up and running, and then a few events kind of happened, and off it went from there. So it's kind of similar in the sense that, you know, we are the first, especially from a TGA standpoint, that has arrived here in Australia. So you got that kind of initial barrier to break, basically, and that's where we're kind of.
Well, I think that's the other interesting thing is you're not. I have a mate who sells coconut water, right? And he's selling in Woolworths, and he's bringing the stuff in by the container load. He's doing really well, but coconut water isn't a particularly low. There's a low barrier to market to.
Absolutely.
Coming in coconut water. The opportunities for competitors to go, I see what he's doing, and potentially be doing it 6 months later.
Exactly.
You know, whereas with you guys, there's a much higher barrier to entry.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's fun, interesting, and it's just, you know, the perception that people have, and that's where the marketing comes in to be basically change that way of thinking. Because automatically, where your mind goes, it's like hangover cure, you know, a cure. We tried our very best to come up with a full cure, to completely eradicate all the damage alcohol done, impossible. You know, it's around educating the relief component of it versus a cure. Not fun.
If somebody wants to get hold of you, so the website is bodyarmor.com.
.com.au.
Okay, did you get the .com?
We did, yep.
Okay, nice. Perfect. But if they want to get hold of you personally, what's the best way?
Website's probably the quickest way, bodyarmor.com.au. Or if it's just a test and trial one of the products, like I said, we're in heaps of the stores.
You can buy it online as well. We ship all over
Australia.
Okay.
Is
there a minimum order for it, or is it six?
Like, 2-pack is the smallest online.
Okay.
2-pack.
Which would cost them?
Yeah, $19.99. And we do a money-back guarantee as well, policy.
What have they got to lose?
That's the way we looked at it. It's like, we sat there and was like, right, people need to at least try it. How can we make sure that, you know, there's that level of comfort?
Yeah.
Let's put our, you know, money where our mouths are, and let's give a money-back guarantee. And off we went from there. And so you try with the 2-packs, you're addicted then, and then off you go from there.
Perhaps you shouldn't use the word addicted. No. That's the wrong word.
Yeah,
but you're engaged.
You're engaged.
That's a better word.
Fear of going out drinking whatever.
Mate, thank you very much for coming.
It's
a great little story. It's a great, you know, a great little, you know, I say little. It's not little. It's Australian stroke Irish brand. Is that what you
that's a good way to put it. Let's go with that.
All right, it's more Irish stroke Australian. Made in Australia, dreamt up by the Irish.
Tested by many Aussies.
Last question.
Yeah.
There was 12 of you on that original trip, did you say?
There was.
The other 8, are they sitting there going, fuck, wish we'd gone?
Yeah, they are. Yeah, there is a bit of that. There is a bit of that.
Sitting there envious in the background going, Did they not want to get involved?
I think the four of us just lived together here in Brisbane or right, in the same area, right, whereas right. the rest came from Ireland, another mate from South yeah. America, and logistically it was a bit difficult to manage.
Yeah.
So I think it just happened by chance.
Well, circumstances, I guess. Anyway, mate, thank you very much for you. It's been fantastic, and we will give this a go over the weekend.
Let us know how you go.
Thank you, mate.
Cheers.
That's the wrong word.
Yeah,
but you're engaged.
You're engaged.
That's a better
fear
word.
Of going out drinking whatever it is.
Mate, thank you very much for coming.
It's
a great little story. It's a great, you know, a great little, you know, I say little, it's not little. It's you know, Australian, like Australian stroke Irish brand. Is that
yeah,
what you
that's a good way, it? Yeah, let's yeah, do that. Yeah. Let's all go
right.
with that.
All right, it's more Irish stroke Australian. Made in Australia, dreamt up by the Irish.
Tested by many Aussies.
Last question.
Yeah.
There was 12 of you on that original trip, did you say?
There was.
The other eight, are they sitting there going, fuck, wish we'd gone?
Yeah, they are. Yeah, there is a bit of that. There is a bit of that.
Sitting there envious in the background going, Did they not want to get involved?
I think the four of us just lived together here in Brisbane or right, in the same area, right, whereas right. the rest came from Ireland, another mate from South yeah. America, and logistically it was a bit difficult to manage.
Yeah.
So I think it just happened by chance.
Circumstances, I guess. Anyway, mate, thank you very much for you. It's been fantastic, and we will give this a go over That's the weekend.
It. Let us know how you go.
Thank you, mate.
Cheers.
That's it for episode number 95 of the CMO Marketing Podcast. My name is Simon Dell. Thank you very much for tuning in and listening to us. If you would like to get in contact with us, cemoh.com, cemoh.com, or you can email me directly at simon@cemoh.com. We look forward to welcoming you back next week.